Can I touch this? You know, I kind of have this problem everywhere I go. You know, men of normal height. My wife and I are here visiting family here in the city. I was, as Mr. Dobson said, I was born and raised here. And on occasion, over the last few years, I've been able to come, but I've not been able to been here to this building. I was at the old place down there, so it's good to see you, and warm greetings from Yuma, Arizona. A little bit warm there, but things are okay. And I did have the privilege of meeting Mr. Boswell, who was playing hooky in Albuquerque. So I don't know if you missed him, but he said he was on a fishing trip. Oh, I caught him. And I did mention that there was a possibility that we would be here at some point because we're here visiting family after the feast in Branson. And it's sometimes good to come home. But that's, you know, we in this country and in this world have things that bother us. Fear. Fear is a paralyzer. It interferes with our daily lives. It interferes with your spiritual life. There are many things that come upon us, and fear is a powerful state where we find ourselves drawn to, because right now there's probably no one in here who could raise their hand and say that there was never an instance in my life where there was not any fear. We've all gone through that. But fear, as we as Christians in the family, and we're told to fear God. Didn't we not sing that song on page number 64? And those words said, fear God. Now, what does that mean? It has a totally different meaning as to that definition of fear that Satan has brought to this world. Satan has brought terror. And then God tells us that we know only the things of men. There is a spiritual terror that we have no knowledge of. And so God has put a hedge around us that that level of fear does not enter into our physical realm. But Satan has still brought fear here. And we see it all the time. And we're going to talk about some things that on a day-to-day basis that confronts us and brings that to bear. But fear is a righteous tool that God the Father and Jesus Christ used to bring into our lives. And as I mentioned, that other fear that we deal with on a daily basis, we must develop, and as we laid hands on little Chandler, a fear of God. But it's not like any fear that is associated with the physical realm. That fear is defined as reverence. Reverence. That's what that fear, when you read in your Bible and it is translated, is a reverence of God. That reverence doesn't come overnight. From the day that you were baptized, you embarked on a journey that brought you closer to God and to bring that reverence into your life. We cannot have character overnight. It doesn't work that way. God has specifically put us here on this earth, and this is pretty much a proving ground for us to deal with fear. Now, your Webster Dictionary gives us these meanings of fear. It says to fear in oneself, to be afraid, to expect the worst, to be afraid and apprehensive for your lives. But they also mention this one here too, to have a reverential awe of the fear of God. And you would think, where did that come from? Because we're talking about the things of men and definition of words that men have laid to bear. In the Harper's Bible Dictionary, it was one of the ones that Mr. Armstrong used to use years ago, and I was fortunate enough to find one through my browsing through the many little antique stores. It says the fear of God is used for the awe and majesty of the holiness of God rather than an expression of emotion. Now, the Moffat translation has these phrases that we'll read here. It says, true religion, that we'll see there in Psalm 34 in verse 11. It says, come ye children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Now, what did we just do here just a minute ago? We laid hands on this young man. And as Mr. Dobson said, you cannot and you will not enter into the kingdom unless you have that childlike demeanor. Well, you might think, well, I can't have that now because there's such terror that is going on in this country that I will not drop my guard and let these people prey upon me. Well, God tells us that He is there as His Son, as we sit here now at His throne speaking. He's talking to you. In New Testament times, the Gentiles adhered to the synagogue were called God-fearers. Those who feared God. Acts 10, verse 2. A devout man, and me who feared God, those among you who fear God. And you can also find that in Acts 13, verse 26. But here are the things that we must know, and to know firmly when it comes to godly fear, and the difference between worldly fear and things brought on to us by Satan. What do you do when you're in distress? Where do you go? You talk to someone? You go to your prayer closet? What do you do? God, who raised His church out of nothing, will take care that all shall not perish. Isaiah 51, verse 1 through 3. That the righteousness and salvation He designs for His church are sure and near. Very near and very sure. Also in Isaiah 51, verses 4 through 6, because He says, listen to me. Listen to me. Give ear. Now, God spends a lot of time telling us to listen. Because this goes back to Israel when he came out of Egypt, and he was talking about those stiff-necked people who walked in our desert. We can't still have these stiff-necked people walking among us now. There's no difference. Just the time has changed. And so God is telling us each and every day, listen to me, because there are challenges in our lives that we have to deal with every single day, and we forget. We forget. And we stumble because we didn't listen. And so we as God's children, every single day that we go to our prayer closet, and He shields us because we speak to Him through His Son, because there is no other way. We love God, and we try to convey that every single day by heeding His words, being here at Sabbath services, going to the feast, being mindful of the poor, and at times being selfless. Because this is one of the biggest problems in this country, because you find it no more. This country is just ravaged with greed. And what more can I have? And war has been declared on the poor. Men of means, I have it. These people are in my way. But that thought just didn't come from them. It came from Satan. He has put it in their minds, because who does God speak of more than anything else in this book? The poor. Have you classified yourself as being poor? We all are. Because God said, I chose the weak and the base things. Think you're weak? You consider yourselves a base thing? To confound these men who have wisdom. And so God gives us this opportunity every single week. Every single week, that our foundations are sure, that our lives are enhanced, and that the things that we bring to the world are seen. Going to the grocery store. Going to the pharmacy. Your next door neighbor. You are that walking billboard. But God tells us to wake up, because we tend to sleep. And since I retired, I'm sleeping a little bit more. I've been asked a question. Aren't you bored? No. It feels great. When I ran into Mr. Boswell there in Albuquerque, just found out that he was just recently retired. On a fishing trip, didn't see his wife anywhere. But it was a great, great meeting to see him there. It's Isaiah 51 in verse 12. God says, even I am He that comforts you, that you should not be afraid of a man that shall die, and a son of man which shall be made as grass. And forget not, verse 13, the Lord your Maker, that stretched forth the heavens and laid the foundations of the earth, and have feared continually every day because of the fury of the oppressor, as if he was ready to destroy. And where is the fury of the oppressor? God gives us strength. And he talks about this fear that grips us every single day because we find ourselves in the midst of this system that we live. We live in the most powerful country on the face of this earth. Everything is magnified 3 or 4 times more than anything else in this world. And I thought one day, I said, with all of the wrongness that goes on in this country, that covers up the goodness that's here, what if just 50% of the people in this country did things God's way? What would the outcome be? The country would probably be 10 times more greater than anything else on this earth. This country sits as a beacon of blessings. We have no fear because of our military. It is 6 or 7 times greater than the next one next to us. But yet we run like someone is chasing us. With all the money and all the firepower we have in this country. For your notes today, the title of this sermon is Godly Fear. What are some of the circumstances that primarily drive us to fear and rely on worldly things that we can see? We will look at 5 key things here today as we look at fears that are physical, and then we'll move back toward that reverence that God tells us about, that fear. But let's read Isaiah 42 and verse 6. Isaiah 42 and verse 6. It says, I, the Lord, have called you in righteousness. And here's the key. And will hold your hand. I will keep you and give you as a covenant to the people, as a light to the Gentiles. That's the world. What are the fears for you now that hold our attention more than war? We have become reliant upon these fears to motivate us and move us in this physical realm. Here's 5. There's more, but we're going to deal with these 5 here. Number 1 is government. Number 2 is science. Number 3 is education. Number 4 is medical concerns. And number 5 is the topper, finances, money. Let us begin with government, because I know a little bit about government. I spent about 5 years in the Marine Corps, and I spent 32 years and a couple months as a civil servant for the United States Border Patrol. And my specialty within that, I did not carry a gun, was communication. It was what I was taught in the Marine Corps. It was just command and control communications, and pretty much that's what I did for the organization. That included agents with guns, being in dark places, being harmed. And so my job was to make sure there was always a resource there for them, because most of these guys, they worked alone. They'd be miles between each other, you know, in certain areas. And it was, and it's dark out there. I've had experiences where I've gone out there and it is dark. I said, man, I said, I'm looking at this. But my life in that scheme was I had video cameras. It was never dark for me, because I had infrared cameras and I had daytime cameras and always could see. Agents were not like that. They're out there on the ground doing the business of government. Government, in the whole scheme of how God views the caring of his people, was to protect them. Protect you in their doings every day. We rely on government, whether local, state, or national, federal, to protect our moral decisions. I don't want anyone to invade my privacy. We want legislation that will have people stay away from me and do the things which I can do and maneuver in life and be successful. Government doesn't always operate properly, but I can say that as a government servant, my job was mainly in the background of not having illegal aliens running through your backyard where they're calling me at 2 o'clock in the morning, what is going on here? Get somebody over here. And we do, because they fear. We have a national government, Air Force, the Army, Marine Corps, Navy, to protect us from the world at large. And we expect government to protect us between these borders, to make sure that I can go out here, get in my car, drive to Walmart, pick up some milk, come back home without being run off the road, which had happened quite a bit, to make sure of my safety. There are some people who just cannot stand government. No part of it. But what does God say about government? Isaiah 9 and verse 6. Isaiah 9 verse 6, it says, "For unto us a child is born, a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder. And his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." Now, you are a spirit being. You've been changed. Jesus Christ has returned. You stand at his right hand to help refix this world, to bring some order and peace to it. What would you tell these people who said, "I cannot stand government"? That's your job. This is what you're being trained for. What will you tell them? You will tell them there is a government that works. It works. It has everyone's interest at heart. Peace is rolled within it. And there is no chaos. And in verse 7, it says, of the increase of his government, peace, there will be no end on the throne of David and over his kingdom. So we as human beings walk this earth and we expect things. Satan wants to make sure that things don't get done. He likes chaos. He likes it when things don't work. When the power goes out. Tornado just ran through. Where's FEMA? Get those guys over here. You know, bring the generators, and that's what I'm paying you for. And those guys do. They work very hard. And a lot of times those things don't work. But yet they stand with the finger pointed at them for doing a not so good job. You know, I do tell people, as you know, with my numerous years of working for the government, you know, I was just a middle manager. I said, you have no clue. You have no clue what goes on in this government. A lot of good things and a lot of bad things. But our mindset should be on the kingdom. But these are things that worry us every single day. Who's on the city council? Is this guy business friendly? Because if you have a business, you know, and these guys are putting the clamps on you, you can't do anything. New regulation. More fees you have to pay. And so we as Christians must keep the proper perspective about government, because you will be a part of that government. And if your attitude is soured now, how will you help Jesus Christ? How will you convey that message to a broken people who are going to come from a horrific time and say that government, this government is good? And Satan says, no, it's not. Don't listen to him. And you, each and every day, you won't need any sleep. And you will tell who's in your charge, this is the way. And like God's telling us today, when we slip, don't do that. Why are you back over here again? Are we hashing old sins? And you're going, oh God, I'm not worthy. You know, why are you bringing this up? I've already forgotten that. But this is us. But Jesus Christ will bring to us that perfect government. And a government today is nothing like that is to come. God says that this earth will be forgotten and never remembered. Now, how can you do that? Unless your mind is wiped clean and the only thing you see is that beauty that you cannot comprehend. The pain and the stuff that we go through today won't be thought of. It's gone. Another aspect that invades our life is science. You know what the score is on that. What's the deal with President Obama talks about, you know, all the other world leaders talking about climate change? That's science that these people are dealing with. And we are impacted by that, because then we enjoy benefits of science. It's right here. We all have one, right? Flip phone, one of those deals, you know. This is the connection. But just think back to the 40s and 50s when you were traveling cross country to go see Aunt May. No phone. So what happens when your car breaks down? You wait 6 days until another car comes by. You wait until another car comes by. And God talks about that in the end. Well, men will run to and fro, and knowledge will be increased. We are a product of that now. I mean, I just saw a newspaper, and that one of the university here, there was something like 30 patents that was awarded to 25 men at the UAH or the university here, what they do the research. I said, I'm thinking, brain power that's here in this community. You know, when I grew up here, I mean, we always had Redstone, and then NASA moved in back there, on the back of the river back there, and doing their thing. And it was just, I can't recognize this place. My brother was just giving us a tour. I said, I got to get out of here. So I don't recognize anything. I said, this town has changed. Science. But let's talk about those scientists in days of old. Isaiah 47 and verse 13. Isaiah 47, verse 13, it says, you are wearied in the multitude of your counsels. Let now the astrologers, the stargazers, the monthly prognosticators, stand up and save you from what shall come upon you. You see, they had their scientists back then, too. Men who stood before the king. And he wanted to know. He had a bad dream. Come in here and talk to me because I can't sleep. And so God is letting us know. Because Mr. Armstrong used to talk about the duality of Scripture. When you look at these words and how you said, oh, they were just talking to those guys way back when. And you think about the situation that are going on now and how there's nothing changed. What it says in the book of Psalms, there's nothing new under the sun. Nothing. And so we, as children here, trying to stay focused on God, His plan, and what He would have us to do. A lot of us find that a daunting task. Because they would come to me and say, you know, I feel useless. You know, I'm not doing anything. I said, well, yes, you are. There are men that walk among you that have been anointed to do things. And there are men who have been appointed to take care of certain things. And if you don't have anything to do, you do it anyway. You pray. Because I tell you, when I stand here and give a sermon, pray for me. Please. Pray for me that the message that comes forth will enrich your life. And as Mr. Dobson and myself, as ministers, you know what, we have that thing too, because once these words come out of our mouths, we have to reach out and grab them. And not let them flow past us. Because Jesus Christ worked through us to make sure that these words and these messages you get. And as speakers and ministers, we too have to reach out and grab that stream as it leaves us. That our lives are enriched, that we can continue to serve God and serve you. And in Daniel 2 and verse 27, speaking about those early scientists, Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king has demanded, the wise men, the astrologers, musician, soothsayers, cannot declare. They were trying, but they were in a different territory where they could not look behind that curtain. Only the anointed man of God could see that. And so when we look to science, good and bad, because they're doing things with genetics, and you would say, God, please, send your son back here now to stop these men, because they will continue on their path in their mind to do these things, which are not morally right. Education. Think about that. Drumming into you when you were a kid, you know what? If you're going to get a good job, you have to go to school. You have to get that education. We must not, even as children here and men and women in God's congregations, to let education be the de facto factor in our lives, a guarantee. It is not. It is not a guarantee of future success. There are so many master students that are walking this country, working at McDonald's. And we try to put God first. But the world can't see that. They deal with themselves and trying to get ahead. Education today has turned some corners. They've gone places where not gone before. And men on Wall Street think they're God. He said, I have the education, I have the money. What would your thoughts be when God says, I chose the weak, the base things? Now, some of you may be sitting here with 2 degrees, maybe 3. I don't know. Think you're weak, base thing, the simple that God has chosen to confound the mighty? Putting that in the proper perspective, God has blessed many of us with ability to think and to do it rapidly. You thought about thanking God for that? Because that may come into play one day when you probably need to help someone. Not just someone here in this congregation, but out and about, and how you use that process and the blessing that God has given you. Titus 3 and verse 3, and God says, for we ourselves were once foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving various lusts and pleasures, living in malice, envy, hateful and hating one another. We must not rewalk a path that God has brought us out of. And sometimes it's hard, especially I'm accustomed to the L.A. traffic. But I tell you, last few weeks, week or so ago, going through Nashville, that's out the window now. That's out the window. I said, we got to get out of here. Pushing your buttons. Drive down the road. What happens? Guy cuts you off. You know what? At that instant, and I did have a couple of instances, well, my wife looked at me and said, you handled that well. But at that instant of when that occurs, I'm trying to learn to just reach and grab it before it can give birth. Think nothing, say nothing. And if you think, you must need to get some man in a hurry. Let me give that to him. You can have that. You know. But Satan is always looking for the magic moment. The magic moment in our lives is every single second that you breathe and that you're alive. He's trying to find an angle to frustrate you. And so God tells us to be mindful of our thoughts, because he said, what did he tell us about idle words that you may have said 10 years ago? Well, if you're on that one knee and you stand before his throne, he says, what about this? What about that? Taking control. Avoid foolish disputes. Forsaking the foolishness that surrounds us every single day. Or you find a person who just looking for an argument. You go in and you can just see the look on their face. They're ready to fight. So let's begin this verbal judo. And when God says a soft word, and it makes them even madder when you don't engage them. I've had 32 years of dealing with that. You walk in the office and you look at, they're ready for a fight today. So I used to tell my boss, stop telling these guys what you're going to do. She's looking for a fight. She won't engage someone. And so we, as Christians, in dealing with these elements that just jump out at us, you know, government, science, education, they're on our minds because we can't get away from them. You can't have this job because you're not qualified. You don't have the education. Now, here's the kicker. You're overqualified. I had to turn down men who were trying to get into government service, and these guys, almost PhD level. You've got to be joking. Where did that come from? Trying to get in. You know, I can't do it because they put limits on who you can bring in. But we must not be fooled by education. Our education is in this book. You read other books, but this is book one. This book was written for you. The world can't understand it. They cannot understand this. Now, they twist and they turn and say, well, what about this? Numerous people that said, well, you know what? I went to the priest down here, and I do remember, what was that? We were in Phoenix And I had a conversation with a lady, and she was talking about the rabbis. Well, they do this. Well, what about, I can't help you there. I have no knowledge of what they do. But it's almost similar to this. Sorry. Not going to go there. And for us to continue to look at these things that confronts us every single day, we must put them in perspective. Do we, point number four, regard medicine as a way to preserve life and prolong life? What is that? We have these living wills now. You have a piece of paper on your refrigerator that says, do not resuscitate. And you go to the hospital, and what are they doing? They're resuscitating. Now, I've known people over the years who look at medical science as God. Won't take another answer. No. Won't do that. My doctor said, don't touch that stuff. Now you, some of you have children, and it comes down to health care. Do you have insurance? You go to the ER, and if you're unconscious, they're rifling through your pocket to see if you have a credit card. And in some places, put them over in a corner. This guy doesn't have any insurance. We'll get to him later. Where's the guy with the Blue Cross and the federal insurance? Oh, come over here. Now, these things weigh on our minds every single day, because if you lose your job, your health care is gone. What do you do? You got five kids in the house. Wait until they're almost dead before you call an ambulance so they can get them into the ER to be seen. And most of these people do live in the emergency room because they have nothing. Now for us, what do we do with that in our minds when it comes to medical science? When you deal with medical issues, there are some organizations here that won't go to the doctor. Kids have died because they wouldn't take them to the doctor. We as an organization are not that extreme. Mr. Dobson and I, as ministers, do lay hands and put oil on you. And we do not prevent you from seeking medical attention. Putting it in perspective, Malachi 4 and verse 2 speaks about a healing that Jesus Christ will bring, and it will be universal. Malachi 4 and verse 2. But to you who fear my name, that's you, the Son of Righteousness shall arise with healing in his wings. And you shall go out and grow fat like stall-fed calves. Acts 10, verse 38, says how God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Spirit and with power, who went about doing good and healing all who were oppressed by the devil. But God was with him. You too will be in that same scenario when you're changed. These people will be able to hear you and see you. And you will not be put in a corner. But keeping a proper perspective about healing. We just had a few months ago, we had a sermon from our pastor, Mr. Scriber, about healing. And he mentioned that throughout your life, and how many times that you can be healed, there will be one that will come upon you that you will not be healed of, and you will die. Now this brings us to the big one. Finances. Money. We have placed a great deal of faith in the security of the finances of this country. And for many, it is making as much money as possible. Some have enjoyed long careers, like myself. And there's a degree of expectation there for me that money will flow and will continue to flow. As they tell me, Brandy, you'll get money until you drop dead. I like the sound of that. But many don't have that opportunity. I was blessed. Absolutely blessed to be in a position that I am now. We're retired. And as you can see now, we're roaming the country, having the means to do so. But not all are able to do that. And the one thing that God has brought to bear about this country, in the thinking of it, turn to Deuteronomy 8 and verse 17. Deuteronomy 8 and verse 17. God says, then you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. There are many, and I heard years ago, and it was most popular when Ronald Reagan was president, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Well, some had no straps to pull. And I stand before you, blessed of God, because he has blessed us tremendously over years. Blessed us to be a part of his ministry. And while I was working, I was a minister also, done that for years. Didn't have time, found the time. Because there was a people, God's people, and there was a need. It didn't matter what time of the day it was. My day begins at 4 o'clock in the morning then. At times, used to take off from work. Okay, you can bleep this out here, what next one I'm about to say. And go and anoint people. I was blessed with that ability because I was a director. And I'd tell the guys, I said, I'll be back in about an hour. And I'd go to the hospitals. And I'd go to their homes. Speak with them. Anoint them. And go back to work. And for us to continue to do that. We're getting on up there in age, but we still have a few years left, God willing, to continue to serve. God makes sure that funds go into my bank account. Because there's so many other things that could stop that. My retirement was the fastest ever. And Mr. Boswell can attest to this about money after you retire. And so it may take 6 months before your first check show up. I said, what am I going to live on? God is in your hands. January of 14, retired in 13, they processed my paperwork. That's unheard of. End of the month, I'm checking. You're done. What? Checks on the way. So I thank God. And you, as you sit here in this room, can thank God too that He has put that fence around you in more ways than one. And when we look at the circumstance of the day, whether it be medical, education, government, He provides for us. This is what you'll take into the millennium. These are the kind of things that you will convey to those broken people. Say, I've done that. This is how it works. This is how God brought us through those hard times. And once you stand there in front of them and genuinely give them these words, the outpouring of love from God, because you will be a representative of the God family. Everything that you come out of your mouth, that you instruct them to do, will be God-based. And the communications amongst the brethren, it's a speed of thought. You're all connected. You'll all be connected. It'll be God's way. And God's love will flow through you, and you will have the ability to have that love flow to them. Because they will be looking for something. Their lives will be broken. I spoke at the feast about the remnant, and it talked about that horrific time that's coming, where they will be drugged from one end of this country to the other, because God is angry at that point, but not forgotten. Because at that point, when Jesus Christ returns, He's calling them home. And they will come. Nothing will stop them. Our minds must be focused. Job 21 and verse 13 says, they spend their days in wealth, and in a moment, they go down to the grave. It seems that family problems become magnified when you die. Because they're looking for something. What did Uncle Randy leave me? Oh, you're not in the will. Well, I'm going to take you to court. Well, what about the poor? A man who gain their wealth dishonestly. God tells us that we are rich in knowledge. Money can't buy what you have in your head, in your heart. There is no precious metal or anything on the face of this earth can replace this jewel that God has given you. Is it tarnished? Because from the day of baptism, you were handed that jewel. Have you polished it? Have you done the things that will make it shine when you hold it in your hand? But Isaiah warned Judah not to allay with Egypt. This is what we do today. We're so interconnected with our financial system throughout this world. One little glitch in Singapore ripples through the world. In a real fear, in reverence of God, we should never let government, science, education, finances, or medical concerns be confused or cloud us, that our spiritual minds can't find our way. These things will always be here in our lives. God, through Jesus Christ, will furnish our needs, as He's done always. And in Psalm 34 and verse 4, it says, I sought the Lord. He heard me and delivered me from all my fears. Each day, before I'd go to work, I'd get on my knees and have my time with God. Because I dealt with some shark of men. And I had to make sure that God was there for me and that I was doing things that are correct. And that He would keep that hedge around me. And He did. Psalm 139 and verse 10. The scriptures here that I hold on to, that resonate in my mind, Psalm 139, verse 10. Even there, in times of trouble, your hand shall lead me. Your right hand shall hold me. How many times do we think about God and His Son taking hold of us like a child, that we hold our children dear? You're no different to God. None. For I, the Lord, your God, will hold your right hand. Isaiah 41, verse 13. Isaiah 41, verse 13, it says, For I, the Lord your God, will hold your right hand, saying to you, Fear not, I will help you. And we'll read Isaiah 42 and verse 6 again. Isaiah 42 and verse 6, it says, I, the Lord, have called you into righteousness, and will hold your hand. I will keep you and give you as a covenant to the people, as a light to the Gentiles. And this scripture here was read to us in the sermonette. And it's just absolutely fascinating how God winds these messages together. And I'm sitting there thinking, that's in my notes. Jeremiah 29, verse 11. It says, "For I know the thoughts that I think toward you." So you can't put words in God's mouth. He said, "I know the thoughts that I think toward you. Thoughts of peace, not of evil. And to give you a future and a hope." You see, brethren, these words are a guide for us. That through Jesus Christ, we have hope. And we continue to develop that proper godly fear through reverence of all God's ways.